We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It is time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Monday to you. And it is a Monday, October 7th, post-Astros edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ready to roll as we bring you home on 1037 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And who would have thunk it? Astros baseball, sometimes the stars just align. I know they didn't win today. We never know when. We'll start the program, Clint, with these types of ball games during the day. Usually we start at 4:03. Right now it's 4:03. Let's freaking roll. We will get to some news coming out of that Astros game. A.J. Hinch has named a starter. I'll tell you about that at the end of this segment. But how can I not lead off with the New Orleans Saints? They moved to 4-1, an impressive victory after falling behind early. Saints over the Bucks. Teddy Bridgewater has won all three starts since he took over. And just how sweet were these sounds yesterday from the Mercedes-Benz Superdome? They're not chanting Rocky. That's Teddy. Unbelievable. Nobody was even sure a couple of weeks ago that this guy was fit to be the interim heir apparent to Breeze, much less the long-term successor. Here's the thing. I'm not coming to you today suggesting he's definitely the answer to life after Breeze. But boy, did he make a compelling case yesterday. And I do have a full belief that the Saints are the best team in the NFC right now. Team, not offense, not ragtag group that's just finding ways to get by in ball games. Best team in the NFC. And in case you missed it, the team that we all figured was the best in the AFC, they lost last night on the road. Kansas City at Indy. If you're the best team in the NFC, that makes you absolutely one of the top two or three in all of football, and the Saints deserve that designation. Even without Drew Brees right now. Bridgewater, I mean, a performance for the ages as far as his career is concerned. 314 yards, 4 touchdowns through the air. Not only did he remember who Mike Thomas was, he found him early and often. 11 grabs, 182 yards and 2 touchdowns for can't guard Mike. Jared Cook with the mini breakout, his first touchdown in the black and gold. And as if Bridgewater's brilliance in the pocket, much better internal clock in this game, willingness to go down the field against this Tampa defense that was inviting it. As brilliant as Teddy was, Taysom Hill plays 15 snaps offensively. Taysom Hill throws a pass down the field to Michael Thomas. For that matter, Alvin Kamara completed a pass in that ball game yesterday. There were numerous times, especially after that Kamara handoff and then pass. There were numerous times that Sean Payton had that bleep-eating grin on the sideline. And a good friend of mine used to do a morning drive show on this station. Always talked about Payton wanting to be the smartest guy in the room. Well, when he thinks he is, and he actually is, that's when the Saints are really, and I mean really cooking. But don't let the offensive outburst fool you. The Saints' defense came to play yet again. 6 sacks of Jameis Winston in the ball game. The team total now up to 16. And the D-line was the dominant group yet again. It was a reluctance to let Zeke run last week. It was not letting Jameis breathe, much less get anywhere close to eating them W's yesterday. Marcus Davenport, his best game in the uniform with 2 sacks. Sheldon Rankins got into the act. Malcolm Brown, Cam Jordan, this team is starting to feel it on almost every level. And maybe their hottest player in need of a heat check is Marshon Lattimore. Very much now back to all-pro form. It was Amari Cooper last week. This week, he put Mike Evans on the side of a milk carton. Zero catches for Mike Evans. And so this Saints team, again, I say clicking on just about every conceivable level. Yes, the stud punt returner muffed a few yesterday. I understand that there are still some things to be cleaned up on offense. For my money, kind of looked like Alvin Kamara was playing that game at about three-quarter speed yesterday. He kind of does that even when he's really, really excelling. But yesterday, Kamara looked like he maybe just wasn't at his peak. Of course, when AK-41 is at the top of the mountain, I don't know that there's anyone better in the league at his position. He just didn't quite look at that level to me yesterday. But with Bridgewater playing the way he did, the defense continuing to make a statement in life after Breeze, this team is absolutely on a path to be 6-2, and maybe if some things break a certain way, 7-1. By the time Breeze comes back after the bye week, all of that seems not only imminently possible, I think it's okay that we start throwing out that probable word. There will be road trips to Jacksonville, to Chicago. Both of those teams are now playing with quarterbacks that they didn't start their season with either. But I think I might take Teddy Bridgewater right now over Gardner Minshew. I think I would take him over Chase Daniel, the former New Orleans Saint, as well. Things are starting to break the Saints' way. And Clint, in case you did not notice, plenty of video out there to make Saints fans feel even better. Drew Brees out there gripping it and ripping it, throwing football and letting the free world know about it. It's a beautiful thing right now. Three different players completed passes yesterday, and your Hall of Famer waiting in the wings while not having shoulder and elbow fatigue like he has for the last half decade plus is just slowly getting right.
And that's amazing just to see him actually out there throwing a football on a Saturday afternoon. When I saw that, right, not long after I left the 237 Roof Studios, I was in shock. I was like, wait a minute. Drew Brees is out there throwing the football? Like, what is going on? He's not human.
Just about every man listening right now has been photoshopped or catfished in some way, shape, or form. This was no Manti Te'o prank. This was real throwing of the football. This could not have been faked. It was released from Breeze's own Instagram account. It's the genuine article. And right now, so are the New Orleans Saints. I understand Green Bay got a big win yesterday, but they lost with their starting quarterback, and they lost at home on a Thursday night to Philly last week. I'm putting the New Orleans Saints at the top of the NFC Mountain right now. San Francisco's got a chance to go and remain undefeated tonight with a big game against the Cleveland Browns, but I'm just incredibly impressed by Teddy Bridgewater. I don't know if he's the guy of the future, but I know that right now he's putting himself as the leader in the clubhouse for that conversation. And oh, by the way, since you ask yourself this, you talk to your family and friends, and then the guy sharing a bar stool next to you, since you talk to these people about it every single time that you're watching the Saints game with them, I think there's only one way that Breeze retires after this season, and that's after hoisting the Lombardi Trophy for a second time. If that happens and he steps off into the sunset to become the most successful businessman you or I know, then yeah, I think Bridgewater right now is at the front of that line. If it's longer than that before number 9 hangs it up, maybe the conversation changes. But wow, what a feeling. Teddy Bridgewater, here's his name echoing out in the Superdome. Good on Saints fans and good on Bridgewater and that offense. Hey, before we announce today's lineup on the program, announced right after the Astros 10-3 loss in Tampa, Justin Verlander will start game 4 tomorrow. A.J. Hinch was emphatic about it, said he's one of the best pitchers in the world. Why wouldn't we? And so only a couple of days off of a 100-pitch performance in Game 1, JV gets the pill in Game 4. They are not going to mess around, Clint, with Tampa.
They are not going to mess around at all, and this just came through the wires just moments ago from Juan Toribio. The Rays are going to be starting Diego Castillo, so expect to see
opener.
Almost LSU midweek pitching staff, BP day, bullpen, baby.
How about that? So an opener, Castillo going for the Rays. They're going Juan Holstaff. Hey, it is Florida, by the way. It can't be Johnny. It's Juan Holstaff versus some guy named Justin Verlander tomorrow. I know he's pitching a short rest, but you got to like your chances there. All right, big program on a Monday. Gus Kattengill talking Saints with us in exactly 20 minutes. Ruffin Rodrigue hopping aboard at 5:15. little LSU, little Cajuns convo there. And James Buers reacts to one of the best high school football games you'll ever see. STM Catholic of Baton Rouge. And we're going to talk about those Terlings Rebels as well. James Buers with us today at straight up 6 o'clock. Don't go anywhere. We're just getting started. Quick timeout, and then we're back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Right back at it, like you knew we would be. Let off with the Saints. They deserve it. Now we got to get into some LSU football. 7 o'clock kickoff this Saturday night in Death Valley. College game day is coming for the party. LSU versus Florida. And a result I absolutely did not see coming. I know I wasn't alone, but I will own my horrid pick along with Cousin Dino. I thought Auburn would win and maybe by double digits in the swamp. Do not sleep on Florida in the swamp. Lesson relearned by yours truly. Of course, I wouldn't sleep on LSU in Death Valley at night either. But the fact that the Tigers are 14.5-point favorites over the Gators, whoa. There's a lot to digest, and we'll make sure to make sense of it with you all week long. But LSU, getting ready for Florida. I could share some quick updates that came out of LSU's presser today before a sink or swim question. Sadiq Charles will play. So LSU will have its starting left tackle back for this game, but Bedore Traore out along the offensive line. Cordell Flott, freshman cornerback, also out versus Florida. Christian Fulton listed as a starter in his place on the outside, but really that's just Fulton moving from the nickel back out to an island. And so things are back to being thinner at nickel for LSU in this ball game. Other LSU defenders, Michael Divinity, Glenn Logan, Rashard Lawrence, all questionable, but Ed Ogeron said today will practice this week. Finally, on the Florida front, and this is pretty darn important, quarterback Kyle Trask confirmed to reporters in Gainesville today that, in fact, he did play through a sprained MCL in the second half of that win over Auburn, and that he will play in Baton Rouge this Saturday night. Interesting. LSU's defense not necessarily generating the pressure that a lot of people expected, but they'll have more of a sitting duck back there this time around. Kyle Trask, who had been playing well since coming in for the injured Felipe Franks, dealing with a sprained MCL. All right, so that's a lot of current LSU Florida talk. Our sink or swim question of the day, it's a little more historical in base, but I think you're really going to dig it.
Love, exciting and new.
You will never convince me otherwise. SEC football is not about loving your team nearly as much as it's about hating your rival and your enemy. And I know Bama and A&M are big-time rivals, but this LSU Florida thing, it's got an awful lot of juice. And so today, here's what I'm asking. Who is your most hated Florida football player of all time? They leave a lot of options out there on the table. So LSU fan, going full Jim Rome here, give me a call. Let me know your most hated Florida football player of all time. Let's start the hate off on the right foot. 706-0111. Clint, I'm going to let you bat lead off.
You're going to let me bat lead off, Ben, on this Monday. I appreciate that, and I feel like I got to go with a relatively easy one, but at the same time, it's a little polarizing depending on who you talk to. Tebow.
This is you going with Tebow.
Yes, I'm going with Tebow here, and it's more because just it felt like it was the whole – shoving it down your throat, or the whole, you know, the John 3:16, all that stuff. It's great and all. Don't get me wrong. It's great that he believes in what he believes in. But it's just, I couldn't stand him. It was just, he felt like he was too big for his own britches, and you knew that he couldn't, like, cut it in the NFL as a quarterback. And he was so persistent. I think it's everything that happened with him after he left the University of Florida that made me not like him as much.
Tim Tebow, without question, is one of the best handful of college football players of all time. And it doesn't mean I have to like him, right? I can respect who he is as a man and what he's about, but boy, I didn't like that guy that rolled out and wore 15 in that putrid blue and orange week after week. He was basically a baby rhinoceros fullback that lined up at quarterback for his first couple of years, mentoring under Chris Leak, and then he kind of turned into the whole McCoy and really was pretty unbelievable down the stretch of his career. Tim Tebow's a good answer. But I've got two other Florida quarterbacks in mind. Rex Grossman's way up there for me as well. And it's not just about flaming out and busting as a professional quarterback, because Sexy Rexy definitely did that. Grossman was always just a bit soft for me. And he came at the tail end of the Spurrier era. The wheels weren't starting to come off by any stretch. They were still winning 9 or 10 games a year. But Grossman at Florida reminds me a whole lot of Kirk Cousins today. And pick your poison. Cousins with the Vikings, Cousins with the Redskins. That dude was about numbers and stats. The team winning necessarily didn't go hand in hand. And so Grossman, for me, I just never was a huge fan of. And I'll give you another one, Clint, that's a bit of a B-side answer. Cam Newton. You know how much hatred there is for Cam Newton in these parts, right? Not just because of the whole Auburn thing, but now because of the whole Panthers and dressing like a skinnier Oprah Winfrey thing. Let's not forget that Cam Newton stole a laptop, got booted from Florida, and ended up on his way toward Auburn after getting a certain offer from Mississippi State, which apparently never resulted in anybody getting any trouble, because that's how things work when you're Cam Newton. But never forget that Cam Newton was at Florida.
Exactly. I mean, to me, it just, like, whenever I think about Cam Newton, I think more about Auburn than Florida. I feel like that's the reason I left them out of that list, because it feels like, you know, you could say that about a lot of different players. I feel like him now versus more than what we see nowadays with quarterbacks transferring left and right.
I probably did an adequate but not great job of phrasing this question, because I said Florida football player. If I could have just left it at Florida football figure, it'd be the most obvious answer of all time, right? A lot of people around these parts don't exactly care for Steve Spurrier. Jamie Howard, LSU, in a game in Baton Rouge, went out to a 3-0 lead and then lost 58-3 that day. The guy was known for putting the screws to LSU quite often. But you have to respect Spurrier. The most hated Florida football figure of all bleeping time would have to be Urban Meyer, right?
Oh, definitely.
I mean, come on now. I'll never be able to get a certain image out of my mind. And this game for me, look, I spent the better part of 8 years on the LSU beat. And this one for me is way up there as far as best environments, best ending, best postgame, locker room, shtick. I mean, the whole thing. LSU Florida 2010 was remarkable. The kids these days would say it was a movie, and it was. And what I'll never forget, maybe more than anything else, is LSU does the fake field goal, right? And the holder tosses it over the head, takes a bounce, kicker catches it, and then guts out a first down. Well, they got to go review that first down. And I will never for the life of me forget. I'm standing on the LSU sideline, because at that point of the fourth quarter, as a reporter, you're down there for easy access to coaches, players, all that stuff. So I'd already taken the elevator down. I'm standing kind of not behind the LSU team, but off to the side, closer to the 20-yard line, so I've got a good vantage point. I'm basically standing right across Ben Hill Griffin Stadium in the field from Urban Meyer. And he was just such a pompous ass during that entire review, and was sitting there pumping his arm back in the other direction. So LSU would have got a first down, as I was seeing it, going from right to left. And there's Herbs just going from left to right as vehemently as he can and just punching his hand into the air and trying to almost will it into fruition with the stripes. And just always kind of rubbed me the wrong way a little bit. Now, there's a lot more that Urban did that rubbed me the wrong way even more so. But, yeah, it's got to be Urban Meyer at the tip top of this list. I know we're getting some submissions, Clint, via Facebook. We'll put a pin in it. I know I've got Gus Katengo coming aboard in about 5 minutes to talk Saints, get a reaction to what Teddy Bridgewater did. But I do want to explore this a little bit deeper, because Florida is number one on my poop list, and it's really not particularly close, more than Auburn or Bama or anybody else that you can concoct, A&M. Florida's way up there for me. So for me, picking my most hated Florida players and figures, Brother, that's a long list, all right? So I get to just roll it out, the red carpet, about as long as I can. Clint, I know you're taking one now. If we can get it in under the gun, I'll do that, but we're going to have to hurry with it. So we'll see if we can get one through and hit one in right before Clint is saying no. Okay, that's how it goes. Live radio, baby. We'll take a quick break. When we return, it is time for Gus Kattengill. A trip down to New Orleans, reaction to Saints over Bucks, and what is the ceiling for the Saints team before the bye week? Don't go anywhere. After a quick timeout, we'll be back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Let's get back to more of Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports, where we practically wrote the rules of football on 103.7 The Game.
It's getting to be tradition. Teddy Bridgewater starts games. The Saints win, and then we talk to this man all about it. Let's get down to New Orleans. Aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, Gus Kattengill, host of the Sports Hangover, ESPN 100.3 in the Crescent City. Gus, how the heck are you?
Doing well, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing very well. What did yesterday prove about Teddy Bridgewater?
I think yesterday proved that he's continuing to grow. I mean, I think that's the first thing that just stands out to you, really, if you ask me. Just more and more you're seeing him get more comfortable. More and more you're seeing Sean Payton get more comfortable in this play calling and opening it up, right? You saw passes down the field. You saw play action. I thought it was something that he had to do. And what he did was look how it changed the launch points and just helped Teddy out too, especially with offensive line that was struggling with penalties and an offensive line that was struggling kind of with protection. You saw a lot of rollout passes. I thought it was probably one of the best game plans Sean Payton has called in a long, long time. Just smart, had rhythm, had flow, had sense, and it definitely looked like Teddy was incredibly comfortable in that game plan with the plays being called, and you saw him spread it. I thought another sign of growth, man, was you saw his head go left to right, looked over some different targets, even on some plays where he rolls out and he just dumps it somewhere. He's starting to learn where everyone is, and I think that comes from just experience. I mean, you know, again, Ben, we're talking about literally his third start for this team and this coach and this offense. So I like the growth, though. It shows you how quickly he's growing and getting accustomed to it. I thought he executed it to perfection yesterday.
I'm with you. The offensive line was better. The defensive line for the second straight game was outstanding. Six sacks of Jameis Winston. How would you put into words what this group right now is doing? Again, they didn't even do it at full strength, right? They had Trey Henderson out, and they were still tremendous.
Well, I think what they're seeing there is a couple of things. For starters, you just go back to the Seattle game. The Mario Davis calling Drew Brees, asking if he could be the guy that starts the huddle chant and saying that he took it upon themselves and the defense put the team on their back to allow, I guess, Teddy time to you know, get accustomed and acclimated. That's a big change for that offense, you know, when you're taking away your starting quarterback, much less you're taking away a guy that is literally one of the best at his position to ever play. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. So I think it's incredible to see leaders like him step up and say, we got you. Then you're seeing the secondary step up, right? Last two games, Marshawn Lattimore has killed it. He stopped Amari Cooper. Mike Evans had no catches yesterday. Marcus Williams getting interceptions, more like the Marcus Williams we saw a couple of seasons ago as a rookie. And then you're seeing, speaking of rookies, the guy that's going to get a lot of the critiquing, and I think you're starting to see why the Saints like him so much, Marcus Davenport, right? Two sacks yesterday in the games even before that. He's been disruptive. He's helped other teammates get sacks. But now you're starting to see that element happen. Well, if that happens, then Cam Jordan's going to be singled more, and you saw that yesterday. So it's from the front. It's to the middle where the linebackers are. It's to the secondary. That's why the defense is playing well.
Talking Saints football with Gus Kattengill on 103.7 The Game. I guess an updated projection on the Saints record, what you think it might be at the bye week.
Well, I mean, look, you've played teams that have good defenses. You've played teams that are good teams. You know, I mean, Seattle's not a bad team. I know Dallas lost the game yesterday, but that's a pretty solid D-line. And, look, Tampa Bay was with the highest-scoring team or one of the highest-scoring teams in the NFL going into it. And you beat them. And you've looked better every week by doing that. So, look, that Bears game, to me, it'll be interesting because it's the toughest one remaining on that schedule. I know the Cardinals put some points in win, probably more than I would have thought already early on. I think this team's better than Jacksonville. So if you can get to that Falcons game and just have one loss on your record, but look, what's to say they can't go to Chicago and do that as well? So, I would say if I had to see give me a loss, that would be that one because of their defense, and they're pretty good. But if this thing's offense is doing what we saw yesterday, who can't they beat and why, right? I mean, if their defense plays well, their offense, the Chicago offense, isn't very good. So I know they came back yesterday a little bit, but the Raiders aren't a very good football team at times, and they'll kind of have that game in control and want it at the end. So, it wouldn't surprise me if they don't have a blemish, dude. I don't think many people would have ever thought that. But even if you just have one, mission accomplished.
It's wild, man. And that's exactly, I guess, the point. 6-2 or 7-1 is the debate that we're having right now. And I said off top on the show, I think this is the best team in the NFC. And that's what they're proving even without Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, the sum of their parts beyond number 9 look very, very good right now. Do you think that's fair? Best team in the NFC?
Well, again, you have one of the best receivers in the game, right? And he proved it again yesterday, Michael Thomas. It's why you paid him what you did. Solid, consistent, going to get you, when you need him, a catch. I'm waiting for anyone to tell me why Alvin Kamara is not the best running back in the NFL. He can do everything. I don't know why he's not considered the best, but he is to me because he can do so much for you. And if you can get anything else out of those other guys, you started to see Jared Cook involved in the game plan, Latavius Murray involved in the game plan. You still literally have nothing from a lot of other receivers other than in, and you're able to score up and down. And like I said, the more comfortable Teddy's going to be, the more the other guys are going to be more involved. But if push comes to shove, you're in a tight game against a good team, you can just sit back and do what you did in Seattle. Rely on the best receiver, rely on the best running back, and let them carry you. And you've been able to do that. And defensively, your secondary's playing well. You got pretty decent play at linebacker, and your D-line's absolutely crushing it and killing it. Rankin's got a sack yesterday, man. Why wouldn't I? You know, again, I saw this morning on a lot of the shows, you know, they're throwing the Packers out there. I've watched them play. I still think their defense is suspect. And they can't run the football. The Saints can run the football, I think, when they need to. That would separate them. So, Ben, I'm with you, and it doesn't change, I guess, how I felt at the beginning of the season. If you got quarterback play, it's still the same team that a lot of people thought it was a Super Bowl team, right? So if you get good quarterback play, it's still the same team that I thought was going to go to Super Bowl.
Another few moments with Gus Katten going 103.7 The Game. Gus, this time last week, it was all about Pelicans media day. You couldn't even field Saints calls the day after the Cowboys win. Is it more about the Saints today? And maybe even that video of Drew Brees. Was there a little more of that chatter on your program?
The backwards cap, right? Everyone now going to wear the backwards cap. Look, I think what's interesting is definitely a lot of people are pumped with what the Saints did because they just looked good yesterday, man. They looked good. It was a good, solid win. And here's the other element of it, too. The Lakers apparently played the best preseason game in NBA history. Their own Twitter account saying, let this be a warning shot to the rest of the league. Give me a break. Oh, so God. Why even play the year? Why even talk about the Pelicans, Ben, on your show? Because clearly the Lakers are the best team since basketball got invented because of that performance against, I don't even know who played for the Warriors and what they have, but apparently it was the best preseason game ever to take place in basketball history. So I'd like to be excited about tonight's Hawks game, but why should I? It doesn't matter, right? Just give the Larry O'Brien to the Lakers.
You're the man. I appreciate you coming aboard each and every Monday, and none of the irony was lost on me. I think we'll still play the 82 games, but maybe we don't need to.
Nah, hey, I'm pumped, man. I'm actually looking forward. I know for a fact, I can't tell you last time I was excited about a preseason game.
There you go. Flock up. Good to talk with you, Gus. Enjoy the evening.
Thank you, bud.
Gus Cadengill. What a ride that must be. Again, if you missed us last week, Gus, his station over in New Orleans, they're the flagship, right, for Pelicans basketball. And so they had media day, and he said literally we had three straight hours of not only, you know, Alvin Gentry, Zion Williamson, J.J. Redick coming through with live interviews, but when people were calling in, that's what they wanted to talk was Pels. Really? Seriously, like the day after beating the Cowboys, how is that even remotely possible? I'm glad today he's got a little more semblance of normalcy in his life.
Exactly, but you got to imagine, like, whenever you have that kind of thing going on with the way the New Orleans Pelicans are starting to kind of get back into the season starting, and there's a lot of hype surrounding the franchise, I feel like it's right place, right time for those guys.
I blush to tell you how much Zion Williamson went for in a fantasy basketball auction draft I took a part of last night.
Oh, Lord.
And yes, that's the kind of thing that I do with my Sunday evenings because I budget my time wisely. It's a lot. Maybe on the other side of the break I'll share that with you. But the Zion hype, it is very, very real. Hey, speaking of hype, Florida, the Gators, they're coming back to Death Valley for the first time in about a half a century, it feels like. And 103.7 The Game, we want to send you there to help the Tigers cook up a big pot of Gator gumbo. To win, it's really simple. Just upload a photo of yourself in your favorite LSU gear to 1037thegame.com. You'll find it all over our social media feeds as well. Upload a photo. It's you, your favorite LSU gear, for a chance to win a pair of tickets to this intense rivalry matchup. What are you waiting for? Show us your game and go Tigers. We're going to go into a quick break. When we return, a little bit of news on a former LSU coach and a current Tigers wide receiver. Plus, we'll start getting ready for Cajuns App State. After a brief timeout, we'll be right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Always, and I mean without fail, always a great time catching up with Gus Cadengill, bringing the pain on Saints football. We'll try to keep the greatness going. We got some LSU wide receiver news for you, and this is unexpected. I mean, truly, Terrace Marshall Jr., second-year wideout from Bossier City, I mean, it's within a couple of weeks, right after that Vandy game, within a couple of weeks of having surgery on a fractured foot, he's at practice today, running around. Terrace Marshall Jr. is back with LSU football. Will he play against Florida? Almost certainly not. But I think the hope was that maybe he'll return for the Alabama game. I would say, much like Drew Brees, he is well on track. Did not expect to be reporting that to you, nor this on a bit of a lighter note, but it's still interesting to me. Clint, you remember Les Miles, right? It hadn't been that long, has it?
No, it hasn't.
Okay, and he's over at Kansas now. The Jayhawks put up a bit of a fight and eventually got rolled over by Oklahoma over the weekend. And how about this? Late yesterday, it was announced that the first-year coach of the Kansas Jayhawks, Leslie Edwin Miles, fired his offensive coordinator, Les Koning. He gone. And he's promoted consultant Brent Dearman to OC. Kansas football has played all of, I'm not even looking at their schedule, I'm assuming five games this season?
I think it would be five, correct.
When's the last time you heard of Les firing somebody in the middle of the season? This dude always just let things kind of mature until the point of, okay, I have to fire them or else I'm going to get fired. Okay, go find another job somewhere else. Bradley Del Pivito, my guy, go find another job somewhere else. Greg Stadrawa, my guy, go find a job somewhere else. Cam Cameron, okay, maybe just retire. But eventually, just go find something else. I'm not going to ax you. I'll help you get out the door. You must think it's pretty bad in Lawrence, Kansas, yeah. Les, if you're doing this. So some five games into the year, Les dropped the guillotine on his OC, and he's bringing in a guy, Dearman, who recently was the head coach at Bethel University, where they were ringing up 55 points a game last year. One thing I can tell you is this. I watched about 5 minutes of the Kansas-Oklahoma game this weekend. Just happened to be in a position to do so. And again, I budget my time wisely. Puka Williams is a freak. I mean, I think everybody understands that. Acadian High fans will recall a certain state semifinal game against Hahnville a few years back. Puka Williams these days at Kansas is ridiculous. So, just saying. I'm not trying to convince you to watch Kansas football, except maybe for that guy, because he is basically a cheat code. Enough of that. We will let you get in on the sink or swim question of the day. Clint, I know we have some answers on Facebook. I'll let you share the response we're getting. Again, the question, as we're getting ramped up for LSU Florida, it's a hate week, no question about it. Who is your most hated Florida football player of all time? And I'm happy to expand that. Who's your most hated Florida football figure of all time? Because I'd love for you to bag on those coaches that were just bags in your opinion. So, Clint, while we have a moment, hit us with the best from Facebook.
All right, the best from Facebook. Chris W. has Tebow listed as his most hated player. Somebody else threw in a joke vote into the ballot. I'm not even going to let him let his name make the airwaves. But then Kevin A. with a good drop, not long before you dropped that bomb with most hated Florida figure, he said nobody he disliked more than Spurrier. Urban is a close second. And then we had Chad call in right before we hit the bottom hour break with Brock Berlin, a name that I hadn't heard in a while.
You know,
it opened up a lot of doors.
I get the feeling I'll reference that name later in the program. It's almost like Chad was inside of my film study for this show today, because I will give a little time when we have James Buehr's on to talk about LCA versus Evangel. And no, that wasn't the type of Evangel team that's going to have one of the Booty brothers or Brock Berlin walk through that door. But impressive win for LCA up in Shreveport. And Brock Berlin bolting Louisiana, going over to Florida. I believe he finished his career at Miami, if I'm not mistaken. Dude always sat back there in like that 9 yards deep style of shotgun. So that's just a good level of hate from Chad. Who are you not giving love to on Facebook? I'm not looking at the page right now. Who are you not giving credence to? You got to let that out.
Yeah, somebody actually threw in Antonio Brown. I guess technically he's from Florida, but not from the University of Florida.
It's like I thought you said somebody was like dropping F-bombs on Facebook.
No. That person would have been deleted from the comments.
Antonio Brown, you don't want to bring that to the program. Okay, he's a Chippewa. Actually, yeah. I think he literally still is a Chippewa. He's enrolled online with the Fighting Chippewas.
No eligibility.
And I don't know that he's got a lot of active brain cells that are clicking around up there. But thank you for injecting Antonio Brown into the conversation, One of our loyal Facebook followers. All right, I do want to start some of our previews. Cajuns, App State, we'll carve out more time for it later in the program. But as we wind down, hour number one, the latest from Billy Napier, and he said it earlier today in his press conference, just excited to have an opportunity to represent UL on a national spectrum. At least I'm told that we have that ready to go. Billy Napier, again, met with the media earlier today here in Lafayette. Getting ready for App State, a team that, if you just look at the also receiving votes category, should be about the number 28, 29 team in the country. Again, that national scale idea.
We're excited about the opportunity to represent this community, excited about the opportunity to represent UL and anybody that cares about the Cajuns. You know, I think it's unique in the fact that we get a chance to put on display this place and what we're about. And I think our team looks forward to representing this place. So
let's go to the defensive side of the football, because you're going to have to go up against Zach Thomas, this Mountaineers offense. Do you have all hands on deck? As good as Andre Jones and company have been filling a void on defense, boy, it would be nice to have Chauncey Manack back. Will that be the case?
Well, Chauncey impacts every game that he plays in. You know, he has participated the last 2 days in practice and is getting better each and every day. I think it's more of a comfort level with him than maybe his health. You know, he's got to develop some confidence that he is back and ready to and prepared to play. But we'll test him even more today and hopefully ramp him up and create that confidence as we get closer to the game. But any game with Manack is better than a game without him, I would say that.
Seems promising, the build-up to get back one of your best edge rushers. We'll get one more for Billy Napier, and then we got a final word coming at you. Here's what he thinks stands out the most when he watches this Mountaineers team on film.
Well, the first thing is you definitely have three different coordinators. Certainly the influence of the past is there. There's no question about that. And the holdover coaches that they do have are in positions where they certainly affect what's happening, whether that's the O-line guy or the safeties coach, the outside backers coach, the receivers turn tight end coach. But different play callers. But the thing that stands out is the veteran players. You know, they've got a really core group of players that have been playing a long time there. They know how to win. And certainly we've got a ton of respect for that group of players.
Big opportunity. Winner, in all probability, could vault into the top 25. App State wins. It feels a little more concrete because they're a little closer. But the Cajuns, hey, you beat that team. Nobody says that won't be you that leapfrogs in to the top 25. All right, CD, let's wind this hour down with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Streaking! The Florida Gators have been going streaking. This stat floored me. Cole Kubelek of SEC Network dropped this earlier this morning. With the win over Auburn on Saturday, the Florida Gators now have the longest active win streak in the SEC at 10 games. Would have never thought that. It's a mind blow that the Gators are streaking. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We're coming right back in. Ruff and Rodriguez in 20 minutes. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. Back at it. Bringing you home for another hour and a half on 1037 The Game. As always, or at least at the beginning of the week, on a Monday, per the usual, we're live from inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Ruff and Rodri coming aboard in less than 15 minutes, exactly 1 hour from this moment. James Buers talking prep sports. But I want to launch into some LSU Florida talk. We got there a little bit briefly in hour number one. Let's explore the space right off top. You want to call in, get in on the Tigers and Gators action early. We'll be your Huckleberry. 706-0111. Florida quarterback Kyle Trask confirmed to reporters in Gainesville earlier today. Yep, he did play through a sprained MCL in the second half of the Gators' win over Auburn. That is one tough hombre. And if you know his story, he's finally got an opportunity to start. I think he's going to grab onto that with just a kung fu, death grip, and he ain't letting go of it. Trask, a career backup in high school, but Dan Mullen saw him, wanted him on the roster after having him in camp. He's been a backup to Felipe Franks. Now he's in there, and Trask trying his best to make it count. And after a huge and unexpected underdog win over Auburn, Florida, still a top 10 team in the country, they're going to come in to Death Valley, 7 p.m., night game. College Game Day has announced they'll be there. LSU announced mid-morning the game is officially sold out, and this should be magic. It's not often we get LSU Florida at night in Baton Rouge. It happened in 2007. It's one of the most memorable games that hallowed stadium has ever seen. Happened again a few years later, 2009. I covered that game. It was 13-3. By and large, it was a dud. Really loud. I think it was number one versus number three. Really, really low scoring. And I think this should be the first time since that it's happened. LSU Florida almost always has 230 CBS written all over it. And for whatever reason, the scheduling gods forced CBS's hand to take Alabama A&M. Good luck and God bless with that game and those ratings. LSU Florida is going to be a powder keg in Baton Rouge on Saturday night. and I'm awfully excited for it. But the one thing I'm still trying to wrap my mind around, just some bulletin board material for Florida, and LSU didn't provide it. Clint, I know you saw this. Opening line at 14.5 in favor of LSU.
That's wild.
Whoa. And so if you want to be in the discussion with Alabama and with Georgia, I guess sometimes you have to accept the fact that you're going to be prohibitive favorites over a team that's, you know, in the top 10.
Yeah.
And while many of us thought Florida were imposters and that Auburn would expose the Gators, Oppo like Taco. Bo Nix, all of a sudden, is the guy that we're not quite sure about. Auburn's offensive line is now suspect. Gus Malzahn has a gimmick-laden offense. All those things that we weren't saying about Auburn. In the month of September, we are shouting it from the rooftops in October. But can Florida bring that on the road to Death Valley? Can Kyle Trask do the game management thing like he did in the second half, lording over a lead and helping Florida to a win over Auburn? Can he do that against a potent LSU offense? Vegas certainly thinks not, as far as the injury front is concerned. Ed Ogeron announced earlier today, Sadiq Charles will play. Still won't come out and tell you out and out. He's been suspended. He was doing whatever we all probably suspect he was doing. But nonetheless, Charles will be back and starting at left tackle and right on schedule. LSU, after the Texas game, this is the biggest game of the year to date. And you're going to have Sadiq Charles at left tackle. You're going to have Ed Ingram at left guard. Yes, this is about all that you could ask for, getting back to your best five. And not a moment soon enough. Bedard Traore will be out, however, along the O-line. More updates from Ed Ogeron. Cordell Flott officially out versus Florida. That's a big deal. You'll recall that Flott started the Utah State game opposite of Derek Stingley Jr. Christian Fulton was in the nickel. That was a pretty good thing. LSU held a good Utah State Aggies offense to only 6 points. Well, Flott won't be able to play in this one, injured. And so Fulton back out on an island opposite of Stingley, and LSU back to being thin at nickel. Kerry Vincent Jr. is going to be thrust into an interesting spot in some of these passing downs and distances. Also on the defensive side, Michael Divinity, Glenn Logan, Rashard Lawrence, all listed as questionable by Ogeron, but Coach O did say that all will practice this week. And finally, a note that won't affect the LSU-Florida game, but it will maybe the latter part of October, perhaps that Alabama game, early November. Terrace Marshall Jr., less than 2 weeks after fracturing his foot at Vandy, having surgery, back at LSU practice on the Ponderosa today. So that, certainly, big news. And we've been having some fun with this LSU-Florida game, asking you in the 4 o'clock hour, our sink or swim question today, who is your most hated Florida football player of all time? We've extended that to Florida football figure. Some good responses so far on Facebook. Steve Spurrier, not even close, except that Urban Meyer may measure up, one of our respondents said. We had Tim Tebow in there. That was Clint's answer. It's the lowest hanging fruit possible, but it doesn't make it wrong. Certainly, Tim Tebow belongs on that list. And the back and forth between Tebow, LSU Nation in 2007, calling the cell phone, Tebow ringing you up while going into the end zone in that epic 07 clash. Yeah, that's the stuff that legends are made of. And it's also the stuff that hatred is made of. We've been getting some good responses there. I offered up Rex Grossman, and never forget that Cam Newton was on that campus, matriculated for a little bit, stole a laptop. So, yeah, that counts. He's a Florida football player, and you could throw your hate that way. Chad called in and gave us Brock Berlin. Clint, are you adding to the pile?
Oh, a couple of people are adding to the pile, actually. A guy, Tad Q, dropping in Brandon Spikes. He said that several LSU people hate that guy.
I'll tell you why in a moment, but go ahead.
And then Brandon F. is dropping in Percy Harvin.
Percy Harvin and his migraines. The only thing less believable than those migraines are the heart palpitations from Urban Meyer after Nick Saban bent him over like a crying child in Walmart and spanked his backside in Atlanta, if you ask me. Which you didn't, but I still volunteered it. Brandon Spikes, LSU, Florida. I guess you would call that a revenge game. So after what LSU did to Tim Tebow and company in 07, en route to the Tigers winning the BCS National Championship in 08. Later that year, I'm going to guess in October of 08, the Tigers, with, I'm assuming, Jarrett Lee at quarterback, took a trip to Gainesville, and it did not go well, to the tune of 51-21, if memory serves. I'm not even looking it up. That's just going right off the deck, brother. LSU, Florida, Gainesville, I believe it was 51-21. Brandon Spikes had a defensive touchdown, and he punted the football into the stands at Ben Hill Griffin Stadium. And if you watched it on TV, he basically punted the football through your heart if you were an LSU football fan. You're giving thumbs up. Was it indeed 51-21?
Yeah, 51-21 in 08.
You know what that proves? I haven't had too many beers in the last 11 years. That one's still
that one's still
floating around in the noggin, so I'm allowed to have a few more. Come back to me in 10 years. If I still retain that, I can have a few more.
And it helps matters you bring it up. You have that watershed moment that reminds you of it when Brandon Spikes just kicks the football.
Punted the football right through your heart. There's no question about it. Some pretty good submissions there. We'll keep taking them as the show progresses. Speaking of progressions, we're going to progress into one of our favorite guests every single week, Ruff and Rodrigue, on the other side of this break. So don't go anywhere. A little LSU, a little Cajuns. One thing we know, there'll be a lot of enjoyment. So after a brief timeout, we'll be right back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports. But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Back in, and what a time to follow South Louisiana football. The Raging Cajuns on the cusp of a huge home game against App State. LSU undefeated. Undefeated Florida coming to town to meet them, and the Saints just keep on rolling. And with that, we got to bring in Ruff and Rodrigue, owner of Rufino's on the River. You just got to sit back and enjoy it sometimes, Ruff.
Yeah, I think so. It was been a great first half of the season. We were expecting this, especially with the coaching staff they have. Billy coming in and his, you know, it's just so much fun to watch. And think about it. When's the last time we saw, you know, the Saints? We all know about their offense, but LSU and the Cajuns having this much productivity and success on offense as they're having. And it's just fun, man. You know, it energizes everybody. It puts everybody in a good mood. It puts everybody – because you're watching really fun football. And then finally, this past weekend, LSU obviously worked on a lot of things. They did they made some moves on defense that seemed really to help. And people are like, oh, it's Utah State. And then during the game, I was like, wait a minute. This team averaged over 550 yards a game. We held them to 155 or whatever it was. And two of them, two of them were long pass plays. Perfectly thrown. So what can you say, man? And it's a lot of fun. I can't wait for Wednesday night, in Lafayette. It should be rocking. Hopefully everybody we just packed the house and, Saints yesterday with a great win with Teddy, and it shows you, man, how Sean Payton. I still say this: Sean Payton is the greatest offensive mind in the history of football, bar none. What he does with schemes and everything. Look what he did for LSU this year. The guy's a genius. He really is.
And you know what? I'm with you on Payton, and I think part of it, when you look at LSU and UL, the offensive outburst, it's a youth infusion. You take nothing away from Steve Ensminger, but what Billy Napier and Rob Saylor are doing here, and they're doing it with the fairly green quarterback, it's obvious. But there's no question that Joe Brady has helped what's going on in Baton Rouge. So in both cases, it doesn't hurt to get younger.
No, it does not. I mean, you got, you know, look what it did for Lincoln, Oklahoma,
yeah,
bringing in Lincoln Riley. You know, Bob Stoops is a legend. All of a sudden, you know, he doesn't have a job. I mean, you know, it. And that's the thing is the offense has changed so much, and they're taking advantage of the rules. So there's so many more slants. Teams were afraid to do slants because players were afraid they'd get their head knocked off back in the day with the free safeties, and now you can't do that. So it's a lot easier to make that pass and to take a little more of a chance. And it's a hard hardest route to cover.
Let's zero in on that Cajuns game. It's coming up in almost 48 hours, 7 o'clock on national television. We know it's a great platform for Billy Napier and company. We know they've had a week and change to prepare for it. And we also know that their defense has been up to the task these last couple of games. How do you look at it?
You know, it's a story program, we all know. I think the biggest upset of all, they beat Michigan a few years back and really brought them to national prominence. And always just strong, strong. But, man, what I love, Ben, more than anything about what Billy's doing is the culture that they brought so fast. Kind of reminds me a little bit of like when Nick Saban came in LSU and, you know, had kind of a real, not a great culture. And all of a sudden, 2 years later, they're winning games and the fan base is excited. That's what they're doing. They just brought this coaching staff. They brought some players and the current players believed in them. They got rid of the players that didn't. And the team is just, the locker room is a completely different locker room than it was 3 years ago. I mean, it's night and day. And that's how they win the games, man. They're believing in the system. Like you said, just a quarterback who's not, you know, great by all means. He's just solid. And it's a system, man, and they believe in it. And it's amazing to watch.
Let me add this. The Cajuns opened up as 2-point underdogs in this game to App State. As things stand today, Ruffin, 1-point favorites. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I make of that is they covered every game this year, and their offense is that good. I mean, I think Vegas is like, wait, hold on, what are we doing? You know, this team's been covering, man. What do you? It's like LSU opening up at 13. I think it's at 15. You know, people ride. They ride the wave, man. They ride the wave, and it's fun to watch. And you know, the good thing about it is that defensively, both teams are tackling so much better as the season progresses. So that's where they'll win games, making sure that App State doesn't put points on the board, but too many points on the board. But they like the big thing is, Ben, it's got to be, look, it's a Wednesday night only game kind of deal. ESPN, you got to get everybody riled up, you know, for recruiting, everything, pack the stadium, make sure you're on TV, nothing but red, and it just, you know, it just gets everybody excited, you know, around the country watching Cajun football.
And go crush some $2 beers, maybe show up a little late to work on Thursday. It wouldn't be the first time, right?
How about when you get the mayor, I'm going to make a call, and let's just give everybody off on Wednesday.
That's not bad.
You know, so we can tailgate all day. You know, let's do it.
Not bad. Hey, we'll switch it over to some LSU talk momentarily. But, Ruffin, while we got you, what's the latest at Ruffino's on the River?
Oh, just football, a lot of fun, a lot of private parties. People are really starting to book up the Christmas season private parties. So you need a private room or the patio or whatever, you know, call Ruffino's and book it, man. It's such a fantastic time of year, the big Christmas tree. There's so many different things going on that people just love the spirit of the holiday season. And, a lot of fun, man. A lot of, you know, to-go menus for big events for holidays and all that. So it's coming. It's right around the corner. You know, you walk into Lowe's or Home Depot, whatever. I know in July and they've got Christmas stuff, but, you know, it's you're starting to see it on the other stores already. So get you in the spirit.
Keep going with holiday season and football season at Ruffino's on the River. The website, ruffinoslafayette.com. All right, we will switch it over to LSU football. If you're Dave Aranda, Ruffin, and you have the knowledge that Kyle Trask, Gators quarterback, is going to come into town and play on a sprained MCL, how does that change the way you scheme for this one?
I had a sprained MCL. And a little bit of the ligament stuff, the cartilage stuff. It hurts. But you know they got you can put a little I forgot what the shot they do, but it's not really to numb it, it's to strengthen it, and that's something he can come back from. But you know he's a grinder, he's a tough kid. And I can tell you the young kid they brought in, the Jones kid, I thought he looked pretty good. They limited him to death, but I thought the kid looked pretty good throwing the ball, you know, and they got some good receivers. So, look, you know, people ask me why is the line so big? is because of the points that LSU is putting up. Man, it's just a touchdown, you know, the whole deal. Have we played a great defense? No. You know, Texas is probably the best we've seen, and we ran right through them. So, you know, Florida's got a really good defense. And after last week, I could tell you that with the changes LSU made, LSU's got a really good defense. So it's a you know, Ben, it's an amazing time to be in South Louisiana with football. Like I said, with the offenses,
there's no question.
The defenses will get better and better. Look at the Saints' defense, how good they're playing. You know, they knew they had to step it up because Breeze was out, and all of a sudden they gave Teddy time, and look what he did. So same thing with LSU, same thing with UL. We gotta make sure we tackle. And, you know, and get those three and outs like LSU did this weekend. I mean, how about that? I mean, that offense was powerful. And 140, I don't know how many three and outs they had. I know they only had one third down conversion. That's amazing. You know, that those guys went home with their head between their legs, you know. And it's a fun time. So Florida is going to bring – look, Florida's defensive line is really, really, really good. In depth and the whole deal, but I can tell you they haven't seen anything like the receivers they're going to see in the offensive line, the whole package. I think they'll be ready for it this weekend. And just the hype, man. I mean, we got ESPN coming in town, and you know, there's so much going on. It's crazy. You know, people are just blowing my phone up for reservations at the Baton Rouge Rufinos, and it's a lot of fun.
Are you guaranteed to stop in by Herbie when he comes through town?
Yeah, well. We communicate through most of the football season just about, you know, different teams and players. And, you know, we text each other on Sunday about, you know, about the weather and how beautiful it's going to be and how excited he is. And, yeah, he's going to come in on he comes in on Friday night. I mean, his schedule is just ridiculous. He showed it to me last year. And, he doesn't have time. I don't know how he has time to sleep. It's crazy.
Unbelievable. Glad you made time for us. Enjoy the rest of the week. It's going to be a huge Wednesday and then Saturday night in South Louisiana.
Sounds good, my man. Have a great day.
That's Ruffin Roderick, owner of Rufino's on the River, and a guy that's pretty yoked to get on this side of the basin Wednesday night. How do I know? We've talked about it a few times off air. He's pretty excited about the Cajuns covering game in, game out as well. And I'll repeat what Clint said when we had Ruffin last week. Good teams win. Great teams cover. End of discussion. We got a lot more show coming at you. Time to throw some shade when we return, and a tidbit on a former LSU wideout that went bonkers yesterday in the NFL. We'll take a brief timeout and return with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Right back in with more of the good stuff. Our appreciation to Ruffin Roderick, but for the next half hour, we've got time for you. Whether you're making your way home from work or school or just dialing us in to, you know, get over having to go to work or school. Call us up, 706-0111. We've been talking plenty of LSU, Cajuns, and the Saints coming off a huge win over the Bucks. That's now three in a row with Teddy Bridgewater as the starting quarterback. We got time on any and all fronts, 706-0111. And speaking of the NFL, CD, LSU wide receivers have had some pretty good games this season. Jarvis Landry went absolute ham a week ago. Supposedly has cleared concussion protocol and should be allowed to play tonight against the 49ers. We'll have that game live in less than an hour and a half on Acadiana Sports Station. OBJ, same team. Odell Beckham has been fantastic. You can go around the league and find a bunch of former LSU wideouts putting up big performances. But DJ Chark really caught my eye yesterday. This is special. The young man from Ash, Alexandria Senior High, started a trend of LSU players coming from the Sinlaw area. And yesterday, in a loss at Carolina. Chark, 8 catches, 164 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Don't look now, but a guy that kind of was slept on a little bit while at LSU. And in that Les Miles offense, he's got 5 touchdowns through 5 games this season and almost 500 yards receiving. So looking like a pretty darn good pick for the Jags. And wouldn't you know it, he's looked really good in connecting with Gardner Minshew. Who would have thunk that? But another former LSU wideout, just not one you would have expected, really showing out in the National Football League. All right, before we throw our daily dose of shade, let's take a trip out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Frank, what struck you most about that Saints game yesterday?
Well, I like the way that, you know, the NFL has kind of maneuvered its way around quarterback safety, but they allowed a delay of game to happen and get Jameis Winston popped by the linebacker coming off the edge. He threw the interception, which was nullified by the delay of game. But he still got popped, and his eyes looked like dinner plates when he got up.
I actually can pretty confidently, I feel like I could say this objectively, Bruce Arians and the Bucs got jobbed a few times yesterday. I do not believe it cost Tampa Bay the ball game. Don't hear me wrong. But I wasn't wild about the helmet-to-helmet, at least leading to an ejection. I thought that not getting that fumbled punt in their favor, which they clearly, I think, had possession of, to me, was kind of screwy. But you're right. Yeah, Jameis caught one right in the kisser because of that delay of game went wrong. So it finally went the Saints' way yesterday, Frank.
Well, the thing that I'll disagree with you on is the helmet-to-helmet. I thought it was targeting. I do agree with you on the fumble. If they pop out of the pile with the football, it should have been theirs. I told my wife that, too. But overall, welcome to the big show, Mr. Marcus Davenport. Will you please stand up? Because I was expecting, and finally he stood up and he started to hunt. And I was impressed solely by his performance. We all know what Davis can do. He covered a freaking tight end going down the field.
Yes, he did.
And almost had an interception. So, I mean, we all know what he can do. But these other guys that are starting to step their games up, my goodness, how much better can this defense get?
That play you're referring to from Davis stands out in my mind. It was early in the game. He ran stride for stride with O.J. Howard, and a very athletic tight end, and then stuck the hand out there like you teach a DB to. That's uncanny from a linebacker. So on all three levels, these cats are going places right now, Frank.
Well, and another thing is I think his name is Harris, the one that got his ankle twisted back towards his elbow. That was nasty to watch, but I hope he's okay.
Yeah, no update, I believe, on Deontay Harris just yet. But as always, this was too easy. Thank you, Frank.
Thank you, Ben.
There you go. Little Saints chatter. We can get more of that. 706-0111. But while I've got a moment, I will issue my daily reminder to you that no one throws shade outside your home or your business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the customized patio covers with the cypress accents, and the standing seam metal awnings. And know that you can trust their professional installers inside your home and then to beautify life outside your home. Collectively, the team at Patio Center is ready to give you the baddest patio on the block. And they could do it before the Super Bowl. But you better hurry to the website, patiocenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
Time and again, Clint, we steal from the great SVP, Scott Van Pelt, and his Bad Beats segment. Typically, it's about when you have a wagering bet, and it just goes south in the last second, the last minute. You basically had it, and the rug comes out from underneath you. I witnessed somebody have a fantasy bad beat, and I don't know that I've ever quite seen it this way. And forget about all that. I stayed up late night. It was the last play of the Sunday night game, and I just had to watch my team get punched in the gut late. This wasn't quite like that. I watched a close family member be on the bad end of a fantasy week, Clint, which they lost by 3 points. And you're going to say, well, that's not all that close, Ben. I've lost by decimals. Here's the thing. They lost by 3, and they went up against the guy who had the Philly defense yesterday. please tell me, Clint, are you aware what the Philadelphia Eagles did on defense yesterday?
Not 100% sure, so kind of catch me up to speed here.
Allow me to enlighten you. They only allowed 6 points to the Jets. That's pretty good in fantasy terms.
Yeah.
In the modern NFL, it's almost a miracle. They had 10 sacks, 2 interceptions,
yep,
a forced fumble, and scored twice on defense. Clint, the Saints are off to a pretty good defensive start this year. We'd agree, right?
Yep.
They have 16 sacks through 5 games. The Eagles had 10 sacks yesterday.
Jeez.
2 interceptions, a forced fumble, and they returned 2 of those turnovers for touchdowns for a grand total of, wait for it, 35 fantasy football points yesterday.
That's amazing.
How mad would you be if you basically were 32 points clear and the Eagles rung up 35 points on your fantasy team
with
their defense? This human being was, and the texts are still coming through to me about it. So shout out to this unnamed person, and God bless anyone out there who was on the other fantasy side of the Philadelphia Eagles defense. 35 fantasy points. That's a bad beat.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
I can give you a reference point, Clint, because I know you're a man who is all about his numbers.
Yep.
Michael Thomas had just a nutty day yesterday, right?
Yeah.
41 fantasy points.
Okay.
35
yeah.
for a defense. I would be apoplectic.
That's about how it was for me week one, because I had the Minnesota Vikings when they just trounced the Atlanta Falcons. That was about what I had. It was I was loving the fact I had the their defense that
yeah,
week.
Yeah, okay. So when you say it's about what you had, yeah, except for you were the foot doing the stomping.
Yes.
This dude was the cockroach, right? You yeah. were the boot. So
exactly.
Let's, you know.
It just reminds me of that.
Les Miles style. I did not feel like the nail, right? So in the hammer and nail equation here, let's just remember which piece of hardware that you might be. I want to get to the Houston Astros. I know they lost earlier today. So let's finish up our second hour. Stros, Rays, who's pitching in game 4? We'll tell you that. And we'll look ahead to a pretty interesting National League side of the divide, because it's getting interesting in and of itself. We'll take a quick break and then return with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Raymond Parts the Third here, host of RP3.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Big, big week on tap. Glad to be here inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing, at least for a day with Clint. But I'm not going to lie, I'll be pretty amped up to get back out to Pete's on Johnston tomorrow. And, of course, the Tap Room River Ranch, our home every Thursday. I'm working on getting a special guest to that show. Somebody that can maybe learn us a thing or two about the Red River rivalry. I know LSU Florida is all the rage here, locally, and I think for a lot of people in the Southeast, maybe across the landscape of college football. Some 7 hours earlier in Dallas, pretty big game will ensue as well. So we'll see if we can't get a fun preview of that, but know that we're going to have a fun time Thursday at the Taproom River Ranch either way. I think by the time we get to Thursday, Clint, with any luck, this Astros-Rays ALDS will have met its natural conclusion. After yep. all, after today's 10-3 loss, Stros finally took one on the chin against the Rays. This one was in Tampa. Immediately after the loss, A.J. Hinch said, we're throwing Justin Verlander. That game's going to be played tomorrow, again at the Trop, and JV's going on 4 days rest. Verlander threw 100 pitches, 67 of them for strikes in a game 1 win on Friday afternoon. So 4 days rest for Verlander. No Jose Urquidy, nothing like that. The Stros are going for the jugular right here and right now. Something to consider. If it works out the way Hinch and company want, Clint, that will leave Garrett Cole as your game 1 ALCS starter. As we speak, the Yankees are making pretty quick work of the Minnesota Twins. They've got a chance to close that series out tonight. It would leave Cole as the Game 1 ALCS starter in Minute Maid, and Verlander theoretically could come back for Game 2. You'll get both of those guys twice in an ALCS.
And that would be absolutely huge to be able to get that rotation going with Cole, with Verlander, Game 1, Game 2. That's the ideal situation, of course. That could wind up changing if things don't necessarily go the way you want it to. Tomorrow, I believe, afternoon, I haven't gotten a confirmation on 100% hard time, but I'm almost certain it'd be like 3:15 in the afternoon on the rewind.
So Verlander taking them out. When you look across the other three series in this Elite Eight status that we're in right now, last I saw, I need to check this, it was a 4-4 game between my Cardinals and the Braves, and that's exactly where it stands now. Bottom of the ninth, no outs. Cards have a man on, and now there's actually one out. So, nonetheless, Braves lead the series 2-1. Cardinals, Braves are tied in the ninth in Busch Stadium. So the Braves could close that one out. And then on the other side, I wasn't so sure that Nats Dodgers was going to be overly competitive. I was a wee bit wrong about that. Yeah, the Dodgers lead 2-1. That game's actually in the bottom of the first right now. But if the Nats can find a way to hold serve tonight at home, you'd have a game five there. And, oh, by the way, Max Scherzer is on the bump late this afternoon for the Nats.
And that could be a huge thing for them, obviously. He didn't necessarily pan out the way we expected him a week ago today. Oh, no, it was Tuesday, actually, when they played in the NLDS. But it was, of course, the bullpen that helped bail him out and some great luck, in fact, towards the end of that ball game on that hit.
You'll take luck at this time of the year. Any way that you can get it. So let me ask you, when you and I last saw each other, because I didn't do a show from the studio on Friday, we hadn't even begun Astros Rays.
Yep.
Got to feel invincible and bulletproof after the 2-0 start, after this one setback. How do you feel now? Not just about this series, but about the way things are shaping up toward the ALCS in the future.
I'm feeling confident for the future because of the fact I feel like this was a game where you know that the Rays contingency was going to be out in full force, and they were. And A.J. Hinch talked about that on Sunday heading into the ALDS Game 3 was the fact that now that this game is going to be a Tropicana, the fan base is going to determine how this game goes. And obviously, Charlie Morton, he had something to prove. He looked really good in his performance. And I can tell you, this probably was the best thing that could have happened to him because of the fact that you did get that loss, and now you're motivated, and you threw out your big dog. You threw out your big dog for game number 4 in Justin Verlander to avoid game 5, and more importantly, set yourself up for a lot of success, as you mentioned, more likely than not. If they win tomorrow, Gerrit Cole, baby, is on the mound game 1 against possibly the Yankees.
Now let's play devil's advocate here. And this is the way that Hinch and company have to think about things. You play the aggressive card, as you mentioned, right? Yeah. You slap down that Verlander card for game 4. Yes, you've stated your intentions. We want this series to end. We want to rest. We want to move on. But what if it doesn't? If somehow, some way, and it's not an impossible thought, yeah, Verlander didn't get a ton of run support this year, I think by comparison to a lot of the other Astros yep. starters, if somehow, some way you lose tomorrow, then you've got to throw Cole in a win or your season's over game 5
yeah.
Thursday in Houston.
Yep.
Imagine what your ALCS rotation looks like then. Zach Greinke, who just got blasted today, yep. gave up 6 runs in less than 4 innings. Greinke
in game
would start
one.
Game 1, and then hopefully you're able to start back over Verlander, Cole, and go from there. In that situation, you're not guaranteed 2 starts from Verlander and Cole in a best-of-7 series.
Yep, exactly. That's gonna
that is less than bueno, amigo.
Oh, exactly. It's less than bueno. I think the biggest thing, the biggest key for me is George Springer needs to find a way to get that bat alive again. I don't know what he has to do, if he has to say blank you Joe Boo or whatever he has to do so. I think that might be the first thing that Houston Astros need to do is start off strong with George Springer. He's 0-for-9, I believe he was, after his way he started off in game number 3 against the Tampa Bay Rays. If he can wind up getting it going, especially in that first inning, because we know that when George Springer hits a leadoff dinger to start off a ball game, it feels almost academic that they can come away with the win. And you bring it up about what's going to
happen. Yes and no. I'm not going to disagree that they need fast starts and they need Springer.
Yeah.
Altuve jacked one in the top of the first today.
Deep center field.
Yeah, they went up early, and that was for naught. So starting pitching is supposed to be this team's calling card. Yes, they likely have the AL Rookie of the Year, and maybe they have the MVP, and those guys are pretty prolific offensively. So yeah, I agree it's a balanced team, but we've been raving about the fact that, man, what are you going to do when you got to come up against Verlander, Cole, Greinke? I'm not telling you that my belief in that trio has been diminished to this point, but suddenly the way that this series might have to end very, very tangibly impacts the way the next one has to begin. And I think that this is an all-in move for Hinch and the Stros tomorrow. Throwing Verlander is gutsy. I kind of like it. But you have to know that when you make a high-risk, high-reward move, it comes with repercussions. And if that repercussion means that you got to throw in a win or season's over game Thursday, if you got to throw Cole, your ALCS plans are completely askew.
Yeah, you're going to have to wind up probably, and you bring up probably having to throw out Greinke game one. I wouldn't be surprised if in this situation, in this doomsday situation where they go to game five and win that one and move on, I wouldn't be surprised if it's Greinke, then Urquidy, and then you play Verlander, Cole, and then you go back with Greinke.
That would make sense in terms of the rest.
Yes.
And the amount of rest you'd give your two aces, Verlander and Cole, but my goodness. If you don't pitch them until games three and four, you want to only fire each of those bullets once from the chamber? Because, man, I think you always want to try and set yourself up to be able to throw those guys twice. I'm not casting aspersions upon your plan, but to say that's less than ideal is an understatement.
Oh, exactly. It's less than ideal, but it's just the fact that you're having to kind of keep in mind you're having to rest them because not only do you have the ALCS, you've got the World Series as well. This isn't like whenever we saw what was it, Bumgarner a few years ago?
Yeah, but it's a stepladder, and you got to win one to get to the other. And there's a chance that Yankee series could be more difficult than whoever emerges from the other side, whether it's the Dodgers or anybody else. So a lot to mull on. And from a series that was almost, I mean, a foot and then a couple of toes buried deep, the Rays stuck out at least that big toe on the opposite foot today. And we'll see if there's still life after tomorrow. Verlander looking to shut him down and move on. Boy, would that be best for all parties concerned. Our best plan, it's what we do every single Monday. It's straight up 6 o'clock. We bring James Buehrs aboard. What happened in the high school football weekend that was? Catholic Baton Rouge and STM? Yeah, we're going there. The streaking Terlings Rebels? We'll go there too. And we'll get the LCA over Evangel. So don't go anywhere. After a brief timeout, we'll be back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Left.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
How do I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Rolling into our third and final hour. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. Another half hour from inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Monday Night Football, Browns at the Niners, coming up at the bottom of this hour. But right now, we got to talk some high school football. None finer than the man waiting aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, James Buehrs with the Acadiana Advocate. James, we're now officially halfway through the season. It's flying by, brother. It's great to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well, Ben. Yeah, man, it is flying by. But I'm glad we're at this point of the season. I feel like I have a better idea of who the elite teams in our area or the better teams in our area. And, you know, it's a larger sample size, so we kind of know more now, and that's always nice to know.
With the four consecutive home games that Jim Hightower and STM have had, especially the epic Friday night at Cougar Stadium, we could, and maybe we should, easily lead with them. But I want to get to a team that won Friday night and I think is starting to steal a lot of people's imagination a little bit. The Terlings Catholic Rebels, only one loss in the season, and it's a blemish against Notre Dame. Nothing to sneeze at there. They beat previously undefeated Bro Bridge on Friday. So let's give Dane Chaponche and the Rebels some love. How are they off to a bit of an unexpected start, James?
Yeah, you know, and you mentioned their one loss to Notre Dame, and it was a hard-fought loss, too. I mean, they really played Notre Dame, I thought, very gamely. You know, just some missed opportunities throughout that game kind of cost them ultimately. But, I mean, really, you know, last year they struggled, 4-7 record, one of their, you know, at least record-wise, one of their worst seasons in a while, you know, they're not used to losing seasons around Turley. A team that routinely has winning seasons and wins 7-8 games and, you know, can make a run in the playoffs. But last year was a disappointment, but this year I think the biggest thing for them is, number one, defensively, I think they're really good, especially at linebacker. With Bradley Boudreau and R.J. Tripp, that's a really fearsome linebacking duo, and I think it starts with them. And then offensively, you know, Samuel LeBlanc having been in his second year as a starter, I think has been critical for them. You know, he's much improved as a passer, and they have some more weapons for him as well. You know, guys like Julian Guy and Coleman Bond, who he was their leading receiver last week against Brobridge, and he also returned a punt for a touchdown. And then I was really impressed with their running back, Larkin Spring. He had probably the best game of his young career so far against Brobridge, with I think around 200 all-purpose yards, both rushing and receiving. So it's becoming a complete team. And when you throw in their kicker, EHDs, I mean, that's critical when you have a kid who can nail kicks like he can. So it's a really solid all-around team, and I don't think they're getting the kind of respect that they should. You know, maybe that's a product of, you know, their first few games, they didn't beat anybody really, really strong. They did beat Como, which is a solid team, but, you know, they kind of handled Cannon on the road, and then they handled Opelousas, and, you know, they lost to Notre Dame. But, you know, to respond in a rivalry game the way they did against Brobridge, a very good Brobridge team, and do the little things well in that game to win it, I thought was really, really nice to see. And now they turn to Karen Crow, which is a huge district game. To me, it's, you know, with all due respect when I say this, but I think it's a battle for second place just because of how strong SDM is. But still, it's going to go a long way in helping either team in the power rankings, because both teams, I think, are going to win about 7 or 8 games.
I'm right there with you as we continue our chat with James Buers, talking high school football on 103.7 The Game. It will be STM, I have to imagine, on top of that 5-4-A district. The three teams in line next, and we'll figure out in what order, Turlings, Cairncrow, and Westgate. And you're right, two of them play at the home of the Rebels this Friday night. So knowing what you know, James, about both sides, the Golden Bears and the Rebels, give me an early handicap of that huge district opener.
Yeah, you know, it's tough. I've now watched Turley twice, and I haven't been able to see Cairncrow firsthand since the Jamboree, and I've been really impressed with Turley, don't get me wrong. But just what I'm seeing out of Cairncrow's offense, just from, you know, reading the stories written by our freelancers and looking at the box score, what they're doing on the ground right now is pretty remarkable. And it's what I thought they could do. I mean, especially with 4 3-year starters on the offensive line and two backs, I just had a really good feeling about with Traylon Prejean and Kendra Williams. But they've kind of even exceeded my expectations in some regards. You know, scoring the third most points in school history against Washington Marion. And then, I wouldn't say it was a struggle against St. Martin, but you would know better than I would. But St. Martin gave them a good fight, and then they were able to pull away. And you know, I think they scored 31 unanswered points. So I'm really impressed with Cairncrow right now. And I would, to me, they would be the favorite going into the game, but Turley is at home and they're playing extremely well. And like I just talked about the linebacking board, I thought their defense did a great job against Acadiana's Beer in the Jamboree, and now they're going to go up against the Beer again. So I'll be interested to see what kind of success they can have against Turley's, but it should be a fascinating game. I'm really looking forward to this one.
Not one, but two 225-plus yard rushers Cairncrow had at St. Martinville. It was an offensive onslaught. All right, let's get to, I think we can all recognize that with all due respect to Acadiana, all due respect to Notre Dame of Acadia Parish, I think right now STM is probably the best team in this area. And it sure looked to me, James, like two of the best three teams in the state played this weekend in the Hub City. The other one, besides STM and Catholic Baton Rouge, would probably be John Curtis. But from everything that you saw firsthand, all the fallout afterward, I mean, the accounts are that was just one of the best high school football games you'll ever see.
Yeah, no, it was tremendous, and unfortunately, I wasn't there. I was actually at that Turlings brokerage game, but from everything I've heard about it, it was an epic battle. And you know, I'm doing our Super 10 for this week, and I'm keeping STM at number one, and that was basically what I was thinking even before the game started. I mean, unless STM just got routed, which I did not expect, considering you know STM was playing at a really high level and the way the game shook out last year, I was expecting STM to be very competitive in that game. And really, we'd be having a different conversation if Kazakai didn't come up with a miraculous catch at the on the sideline and then hurry into the line of scrimmage and spiking it with 1 second left. And then the kicker drills a game winner to win the game. So, you know, we'd be having a different conversation if all those things didn't happen. But unfortunately for STM, they did. And they come up on, you know, on the losing end of it. But still, this is an elite STM team, in my opinion. I think they're on equal footing with Catholic High. And, you know, aside from John Curtis, you know, to me, they're in that mix for best team in the state. So nothing changes for STM for me. They're still the favorite in Division II. They're still, to me, I think they're going to run the table with the rest of their schedule. Don't get me wrong, they're going to have some tests with Turlings and Karen Crow and Westgate this week. But still, I think STM is one of the best teams in the state, and they didn't do anything this weekend to disprove that.
Jays, before we let you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't touch on what LCA did. I don't care if Evangel is not, you know, the Evangel that we're used to, right, with some of the Booty brothers. If they don't have Brock Berlin back there, quarterback, it's still Evangel. And LCA went up there, beat them on their own home field, a game where they were trailing, and Sage Ryan, I mean, just absolutely phenomenal. And so what can you tell me that we may not already know about this LCA team trying to come back for two state championships and one-up themselves?
Yeah, a tremendous win going to Shreveport and beating Evangel. And, you know, Evangel, I think, was 1-3 going into the game, but they had played some tough teams. And keep in mind, Evangel was in the semifinals last year in Division I. So they're not. It's not like they've fallen off the cliff completely. They just may not be, you know, as elite as they once were. But still, this is a very good Evangel program. And for LCA to win that game the way they did, and you mentioned Sage Ryan, you know, I think the school is starting to refer to him as Three-Phase Sage, which is a tremendous nickname in my opinion. But I think that's really fitting of who he is for them. He can do it in special teams, he can with punt returns, and I think he even had a scoop and score on defense, and then he can do it in the receiving game. You know, with a passing game that sounds like it's much improved. If Errol Rogers had a great game, almost 300 yards passing. It sounds like he was very efficient with the ball as well. Ethan Lang, another receiver, really stepped up for them. I think he had the game-winning touchdown reception. So a really huge win for LCA. And, the big test comes in 2 weeks against Notre Dame. I mean, that's going to kind of give us an early look at what could end up being a semifinal or a championship game matchup in the Division III playoffs. But still, for them to beat an Evangel team, like I said, that's traditionally – competing for Division I championships says a lot about LCA.
Yeah, they've had a lot of prove-it games already this season. LCA starting the year off early against Westgate, then it was Acadiana, most recently Evangel on the road, but you're right, that game and a district game against Notre Dame of Acadia Parish looms very large. It should be mentioned as well, Catholic New Iberia beats Ascension Episcopal, so as we kind of discussed, James, that race to maybe get to and through the Division III playoffs, maybe we shouldn't bury Brent Indes' team just yet.
Yeah, no, I think they can run the table. I mean, I think they're clearly the best team in that district. That's been the case for the last 2 years. But for them to go out and handle what I thought was the second-best team in the district in Ascension Episcopal, and they still might be, but, you know, it didn't look like they were struggling too much against the Blue Gators. So I think Catholic High is fine. You know, even if they're not as good as they have been in the previous 2 years, they're still a team you don't want to see in the playoffs because they're used to deep runs, and as Brent always says, we're playing our best football come November, and that's what you want to be doing. So just keep an eye on the Panthers. They may not play anybody big the rest of the way into the playoffs, but I think they'll be getting better and better each week.
See, James, you have fully, I guess, indoctrinated yourself within this Acadiana area. You just refer to them as Catholic High. I did that like one time, and then all of my buddies who went to Catholic of Baton Rouge just absolutely crushed my face. So I still try to give the directional city. Maybe that just makes me a sap.
Well, I mean, yeah, I have to fit in, and I mean, you are a Catholic of Baton Rouge graduate, so I guess you got to do that for your alma mater. But but I don't blame you either way.
It gets bloody, seriously. Whether it's on this show or I do an appearance on CST every Friday late night, if I say Catholic of Baton Rouge, I get text, and you could feel the sarcasm, even though font wouldn't dictate it. All right, James, enough of my BS. It's always great to get the straight scoop from you. Thank you, my friend. We'll catch up soon.
All right, thanks, Ben. Have a good one, man.
He's the best, not just for putting up with my stuff, but the guy knows freaking everything. Doesn't matter that he was at Brobridge Turlings. He's basically an almanac of that STM Catholic Baton Rouge game. And I do have some things planned as this week goes on to celebrate that game just a little bit more. I understand today's show, especially the first 2 hours, has been light on what's been described, I think, fairly accurately from all indications as just honestly one of the best high school football games in a long, long time. I mean, more compelling than STM versus U-High. That was for the state title in the Dome last year. More compelling than the come-from-behind shootout win STM losing to Catholic Baton Rouge last year. This one on Friday night was something else. And so I've got some things planned as the week go on to make sure that we look back on it and commemorate it all the more. Hey, do not forget, every Friday, before and after, STM Cougars football with Danny Jones, we've got football night in Acadiana. So if you like what you just heard from yours truly, James Buers, we're going to double down with the coverage every single Friday. The pregame show goes from 6 to 6:30 on 103.7 The Game. And after Cougars football, Clint Domang brings you home football night in Acadiana postgame style. And, of course, you can always head to our website for even more information. Really cool little feature stories as well on the players, administrators, fans even, that keep a lot of these name brand programs in our area ticking. All right, final break of the show. When we return, got a little surprise for you, but stick with us as we bridge the gap to Monday Night Football on the West Coast. Before then, we got a little more Bumper to Bumper Sports, and after this timeout, we'll be right back on 103.7 The Game.
You're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now back to Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
Back in business, ready to do our thing. One more time for you. Ben Love and the famous Clint D taking you home on a Monday. And Clint, before we dive into some Raging Cajuns conversation, I got to shoot you straight. We have a listener who just isn't quite with the program. Maybe I should refine that statement. He loves the program. He's listening to the program. He just didn't get something about the program. So I figured I'd bring it here before we run out of real estate on a Monday. But late last week at Loco Mero 63, he wanted to know. Just curious. Been listening for about a year. How is Clint D famous? Maybe I've been out of touch. Are we really going to have to tell the old-time grocery story again?
I mean, we could. We could definitely do them. As you've put it in the past, I mean, gather the kids around Bob Hope style and tell the story.
Yeah,
about
sure. It feels like one of those, right? Hey, yes. This is Dick Clark, and we're going to drop a ball every New Year's Eve. And it's going to be exciting, and Dick Clark's going to tell you about it, and then Ryan Seacrest is going to tell you about it, and it's just going to be rinse, wash, repeat. And yeah. So without going full-blown Bob Hope, you know, Dick Clark, Ryan yeah. Seacrest mode, Clint was recognized by his voice.
Yep.
It helped that his name, Clint D, was also on the wrapper of the Po' Boy, and so hence the famous Clint D.
Yep.
They listen to the program. They know his voice. They associate him with the guy who's hungry and also sports talk greatness. So that's as simple as I could put it. And here we are now, more than 4.5 years in, and I don't even have a nickname. And yet every day, like I owe you royalty money to do it, I call you the famous Clint D. Wait until our listeners figure out that I'm getting paid nothing for that.
Exactly.
It's like the one thing I say on the show that I'm not getting paid for, but I still do it for you.
And I appreciate that, Ben. I think that's going to be, it's definitely a lot of fun to keep hearing you say that. But at the end of the day, you have the name on the marquee, Ben. Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. You got the name on the marquee.
So is this where I get to throw a little post shade at our good friend RP3? I say it all in love and tongue in cheek. From the moment he came in here, he's been referring to you as world famous.
Yeah.
That never
he
was what
this added on to it.
That's never been what this is.
Yes.
Frankly, I think that's a line from a Snoop Dogg song at some point.
It's probably is
internationally known and locally respected.
Yep.
Right? That's world famous talk right there.
You got that right.
He just took it and he blew it up, right? He put it on the Goodyear blimp, and frankly, it belongs on the side of a po' boy from Old Time.
It really does. It belongs on the side of Old Time Grocery, it's home of the famous CD.
It's just perspective, man.
Yep.
It's just perspective. All right, now that we've glorified and made better all of your lives with that story, let's get to some Raging Cajuns talk. And hopefully we're not embellishing here. But since our conversation last week, how many people show up? Cajuns, App State, Wednesday, 7 o'clock at Cajun Field. You and I both thought maybe that 15,000 to 19,000 range was appropriate.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're just getting closer to the game, but I'm starting to feel a little bit of a groundswell. That's that word I want. Groundswell.
Mm-hmm.
Do you sense it as well? Because as I go around town, talk to people, and look, I'm talking business owners, right? People that are kind of fired up about it. People that are a little bit younger, your age, my age. Even run into some students, and that's the hard part to kind of grab, right? That student demographic. I'm not ready to tell you, hey, man, this thing's going to be 25K strong, brother. I don't know about that. But I think somewhere between our average of about 17 and 25, maybe somewhere in the middle around 21-ish. Impossible?
If it's 21, that's an absolute win. But the biggest thing for me is, like, the last couple of days, seeing everything on social media, you're seeing all the head coaches put out a video on social media saying, hey, come out to Cajun Field, hashtag Pack Cajun Field. I know they've got the scoreboard has been showing Pack Cajun Field all week long. Add the fact now that parking is now going to be free for people. You don't have to worry about that. I feel like that's going to tip
that's a big move.
It towards 20K that's more than move. Anything. And hopefully they realize, hey, this is getting more people in. Let's just drop the fee altogether.
We should in no way, shape, or form try to take any credit for this, nor will we, because there were so many outlets just crying out for give something away to people to get butts in the seats for this one.
Yep.
You and I thought maybe we know the tickets are free for the students, but hell, give them beer, right? Give them shirts. Give them a hot dog. You're basically giving it away for free to everybody else for $1. Those dineros.
Yep.
Just give it to them. All right. They're giving something away that's more important, in my opinion. You're right. It's the parking. And I think that could have a positive impact on attendance. But the biggest thing here is whether there are 15 or 25,000 in that place, Clint, win the ball game. And with the latest polls that have come out, I think you can ascertain that this App State team is about 28 or 29 in the country, right? When you tally up the also receiving votes, truly, Eli Drinkwitz's team is on the cusp of being in the top 25. So what do you think happens if you beat that team?
You're on the cusp of doing something that has been done a long, long time.
You're probably in the top 25. Seriously.
Yeah.
If Cajuns win this game, I think that they're in that 24 to 27 range. No question. 1943 is the last time the Cajuns were ranked. We talked about it a little bit last week. I want to bring it back in on a Monday. Again, tomorrow we'll go full tilt, and then especially Wednesday, previewing this game.
Yep.
Jake DeLone, scheduled to join the program tomorrow.
Carolina Panthers Hall of Famer.
That's right. The man just keeps racking up Hall of Fame honors, and he'll certainly have a few things to say about that Cajuns-Mountaineers game. So we've only really just begun to preview that ball game this week. But I think the challenge and the gauntlet has been laid out there. Come out, get loud, and stay. I'm excited to get out there. I get off at 6 o'clock. This is the happiest I've ever been for the five guys, their stories, and their lives. I'll be there in plenty of time on a hump day, fired up for it. Hey, excited tomorrow as well. We'll be back at Pete's on Johnston. Our prep power hour going to shine a light on Ascension Episcopal Blue Gators football. So come out and join us with the one and only Blue Gators at Pete's tomorrow from 6 until 7. We do want to thank Gus Cattingill, Ruffin Rodriguez, and James Buers for the locally famous Clint D. My name is Ben Love, and this has been Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Up next, Monday Night Football.